Some 573 micropolitan areas housed fully 1 out of 10 Americans at the time of the 2000 census. And according to Robert Lang, director of the Metropolitan Institute at Virginia Tech, they backed Bush in 2004, 61-39. 27 of Ohio's micropolitan areas went for Bush, and 10 of Florida's 11. Many micropolitan areas overlap with the nation's 100 fastest-growing counties, which are likewise pro-Bush. Instead of being affluent, most of these regions are middling in income and education, filled with young families, most of them white, many of modest means, willing to trade time for space, accepting longer commutes into urban areas so they can afford homes. According to a post-election examination of Ohio's Clinton County, where Wilmington is, some local newcomers drive to jobs in Dayton and Cincinnati and even an hour north to Columbus. If the Census Bureau ever profiles counties by per capita gasoline usage, these places will rank high, altogether appropriate for demographic products of the interstate highway system. Besides the innate thirst of SUVs, some of the last quarter century's surge in U.S. oil consumption has come from Americans driving more. Some 12,000 miles per motorist per year, up almost one-third from 1980, because they as a whole live farther from work. In consumption terms, exurbia is the physical result of the latest population redistribution enabled by car culture and the electorate that upholds it. In assessing their political motivations, coming years will see thousands of exurbanites, now a full 10% of the national electorate, stretched out, figuratively at least, on psychiatrists' couches and sociologists' survey sheets. Still, a few conclusions already seem obvious. Family values are central. If by this we mean having families and accepting lengthy commutes to install them in reasonably safe and well-churched places. In the 1970s, such households might have been fleeing school busing or central city crime. In the post-September 11th era, many sought distance from godless school systems or the random violence and terrorist attacks expected to occur in metropolitan areas. Although many of the migrants likely had conservative leanings to begin with, thereby taking a GOP vote out of Cleveland or Cincinnati even as they added one in a micropolitan area, religious and political socialization processes in the exurbs could be expected to intensify their views. In moving to small-town America, many shed earlier urban democratic registrations. While SUVs became a particular phenomenon after the events of September 11th increased personal safety consciousness, other heavy vehicles also gained cachet. By 2003, the machismo emphasized by Detroit spread to large cars with names such as Dodge Viper and Mercury Marauder. Press accounts quoted buyers half-joking that they would have bought an Abrams tank had one been available. The Marauder VT version, indeed, boasted a 444-horsepower engine, about one-third the size of one of the engines propelling the World War II Martin B-26 Marauders flown on long-distance bombing raids against Japan. That's a lot of engine just to hit a sale at a suburban shopping mall. Nevertheless, the bigger psychological change after September 11th came among women, not men. Democratic pollster Celinda Lake reported in 2004 that women have almost twice the sense of risk as men do. They think a member of their family might be a victim of terrorism. Marketing executives generally concurred that married women saw big cars as protection for themselves and their children, not vehicles with which to work off road rage. By late 2003, according to Road and Track, 40% of the vehicles classified as trucks were being bought by women, and the election year survey for the Kelley Blue Book found Kerry trailing Bush by a 3-to-1 ratio among such security moms. The significance here is difficult to overstate. Election day and post-election polls for 2004 come in many flavors. The network exit polls, for example, put Kerry ahead. But sticking with Lake's survey is useful for focusing on women. Whereas men produced a small 2000 to 2004 Democratic gain, Kerry got 44% as opposed to Gore's 42%, security consciousness among women favored Bush. Here, Gore's 54% became Kerry's 51%, with the decline concentrated among married women, where Gore's 2-point lead in 2000 reversed into an 11-point Bush margin. Granted, there was a post-9/11 mood shift in the national climate. The emotional crystallization came from the Bush campaign's skill in stimulating apprehension among married mothers in middle-class urban, suburban, or exurban areas. Multidimensional fears of what might happen in their homes, in their cars, at their schools, or in any public place that terrorists might choose to attack. Single, childless women, by contrast, did not follow this pattern. For many National Democratic strategists whose screens ping at a 1-point rise in central city poverty or a scowl from Hollywood contributors, the angst of middle America, Hummer purchases by fearful housewives, micropolitan buildups along interstate highway corridors, NASCAR excitement, and a Pentecostal drift in the Hispanic lower middle class, apparently failed to register. By contrast, even such obscure but relevant data as county-level breakouts on the distribution of Florida's 350,000 concealed weapon permits was entered into shrewd Republican calculations of voter psychologies along the I-4. Fear was there to be tapped, and the Bush-Cheney team collected by the bucket. But tapping fear raises the hope that it can be ameliorated by the tappers. Failure, to be sure, would carry a high penalty. Should U.S. policies collapse in some oil supply cutoff, large-scale terrorist success, economic crash of the dollar, or deep disenchantment with White House misrepresentations, public anger could shift from Middle Eastern terrorists and oil dangers to deceit and incompetence in Washington and thus to the ballot box. Like a bicycle, the innately unsteady GOP coalition with such disparate elements is enormously dependent on forward motion.